The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello everyone, welcome to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and as always, I'm joined by Dre Oldenburg and Nathan Gladwell. Well, fellas, you know the four teams in the college football playoff, so we'll discuss that and a whole lot more on today's show. But first, let's jump into AAA. The first story we have today is the Carolina Panthers have waived former number one overall pick quarterback Baker Mayfield 5 months after trading for him. Great, you're the Carolina Panthers fan here, so what do you think about the Panthers making this move?
I think it happened right when we saw how good Sam Darnold was when he came back after we had benched Baker Mayfield. And, having those two quarterbacks, you can't keep both of them because both of them are on high contracts due to them being top three picks in the same draft. So, yeah, I mean, one has to go. One has to find its way out. I think we're starting early. I think we're starting quick. Letting him go find somewhere else to be for the rest of the season. I expect the 49ers to be all over that with the injury to Jimmy Garoppolo. I think it's a good move for both Baker and for the Carolina Panthers. What do you think about it, Nathan?
Yeah, so like right now, the Carolina Panthers have a bunch of backup quarterbacks trying to play as starting quarterback role, and it's just not working out well. You saw what Baker Mayfield was able to do at Cleveland. He was very disappointing there, came to Carolina. He has not looked stellar, and to be honest, there were better options. So it's time that they moved on from him, and there'll be other teams looking to become. I know you said the 49ers. I know a team like the Saints who's had quarterback issues throughout the year. Me being a Saints fan, that's hard to watch. But this really sets up the Carolina Panthers to go into this next draft and really select a good quarterback who can, be a franchise quarterback role. So that'll be pretty cool to see if they can capitalize with their high pick coming up in this next draft. Alex, what do you think?
Well, I was one of the few that thought when the Panthers acquired him back in the summer that he was going to come in and lead the Panthers to the playoffs. Obviously, it didn't happen. Very underwhelming. But one team I'd look out for is maybe the Houston Texans picking him up. Their quarterback play has been atrocious this year. Maybe they want to get Baker Mayfield in and maybe not waste their first-round pick on one of these younger quarterbacks and maybe hope Baker Mayfield is their answer. But I don't know at that point. All right, second story we have today is multiple major universities around the country have named new football head coaches. Just to list a few, Auburn named Liberty head coach Hugh Freeze as their next head coach. UAB named Lipscomb Academy High School head coach Trent Dilfer as their next head coach. Colorado hired Jackson State head coach Deion Sanders as their next head coach. Gray, you being the Auburn fan here, what is your reaction to Auburn hiring Liberty head coach Hugh Freeze?
I like the hire. I think it's a great fit, especially now at the time with the transfer portal, with NIL. Look, we say Liberty head coach. Yes, he was at Liberty because of a mistake that he made at Ole Miss. He was the Ole Miss head football coach and was successful at Ole Miss, about as successful as you could be. As Lane Kiffin is seeing that right now, there is a ceiling at Ole Miss that is a lot different than a ceiling at somebody like Georgia, Alabama, Auburn, Tennessee, Florida, those schools. So I think it is a great hire. I think it's a good fit. I think he's going to come in and bring in staff that has mixed from, other coaches that he's coached with, whether that be at Ole Miss or Liberty, and other good coaches. He said in his press conference that he's had coaches reach out to him about the opportunity to come in with him to Auburn. And he's also had recruits and, guys in the guys that are planning into the transfer portal reach out to him saying that there's a huge opportunity at Auburn, not only lined up with the NIL, with Auburn having one of the best NIL collectives in the country right now and on to victory, but also with the new football-only facility just being – he's going to be the first coach to take over that football facility. Being able to have a recruiter like Hugh Freeze with the transfer portal, with NIL, with that facility, with the fit of Auburn, I think he's been wanting this job for years and years and years. I think it's a great fit.
Yeah, I get the hire. I get Hugh Freeze coming back to the SEC. especially with the controversies he had at Ole Miss, finally coming back, and maybe he can prove that it wasn't just what he did with his illegal recruiting that made him a good coach. Obviously, I think that he has an entire program built around him now, and he just has to lead them to victory at Auburn. So it'll be very interesting to see if he can take advantage of the talent he has on that roster and how much money he has to go and hire some of his own staff. Yeah. Alex, what do you think about this hire?
I think if he wins, everybody's going to be happy. But if he loses and goes 6-6, his first year worse than that, people are going to start talking and bring up all this stuff that happened in his past. Everybody's going to be like, why did we hire him in the first place? He does have a lot of skeletons in his closet. So, and he said he's moved on, and you know, I'm inclined to believe that he has. So I hope that he has success there at Auburn, and I believe he has the ability and all the resources to do so.
Yeah.
All right. And the second hire we talked about was Trent Dilfer. What do y'all think about UAB going out and hiring him instead of promoting their interim?
This is a very interesting hire. I don't think any of us or anybody really expected this at all due to Dilfer's lack of experience as a head coach. I mean, he's been the head coach for 4 years now at Lipscomb Academy, a high school in Nashville, Tennessee, and was highly, highly successful there. But taking a program from going from somebody like Bill Clark to Trent Dilfer, that may be a big, big jump just for somebody that's only coached high school. I think it'll be interesting to see what kind of success or non-success he has at UAB.
Yeah, I think there are better options. I know we talked about Jamie Chadwell, you know, now at Liberty, but I think he was a better fit there. And there are definitely other coaches in at the college level that could have been a good fit at UAB. So to really go out of their way and hire a high school head coach with very little experience was kind of baffling to me.
Yeah, being a UAB student, I was kind of questioning the hire. But some of the motivations I think they had were the fact that he has the QB development in his background. He used to be the head coach of the quarterback Elite 11 camp. And, you know, he has all these connections with these high schools. Maybe there's that. But like y'all said, there are some other candidates out there that I thought were, you know, more qualified for the job. But maybe they saw something in Dilfer that they really liked. And I hope he has success at UAB. I hope that, you know, he gets us back to the Conference USA Championship.
Yeah.
All right, and then the last one I mentioned was Deion Primetime Sanders was hired by Colorado. What do y'all think about this?
Wow, Colorado's about to be stacked. If I'm a middle of the pack, maybe lower tier Pac-12 school, I'm talking about like maybe Washington State, Oregon State, you know, Stanford. And when it comes to football, I'm terrified of Deion Sanders because Colorado is about to take them, or Primetime is about to take them to places where Colorado hasn't been in 15, 20, 30 years. Obviously with his success, his instant success at Jackson State, going 27-5 there, and his ability to recruit so well to an HBCU school I don't know what kind of resources he's going to have at Colorado, but man, it could be dangerous.
Well, big names get big recruits. Deion Sanders, obviously one of the biggest names ever. You look at what he did at Jackson State, a lot of success. It's now just transferring that to a somewhat bigger university at Colorado. And honestly, he has everything he ever wants. He's bringing his own players with him. And I think he's going to probably instantly flip this Colorado program around. And we'll see a lot of success from Deion.
Yeah, I mean, he has success at Jackson State, but Colorado 80, Rick George came out and said, we don't have the money yet, but I'll know when we have it, so I'm not worried about that piece, referring to how they came with the money to hire Deion. So that makes me kind of worried about what their NIL looking like there. Yeah. So
their tuition's about to go way up.
Yeah, yeah. I also found it funny where Deion told the current players at Colorado to go ahead and jump into that portal because he's got his own guys coming. Kind of a ballsy move there from Deion.
No kidding.
Hopefully it works out for him. But Colorado has like no expectations when it comes to winning football games. They haven't won 10 games since 2016. Before that, it was 2001. So he goes to a program where there's very little expectation for him to, you know, win big, go to the CFP and stuff like that. So maybe that's why he took this job, is because the expectations were not as big as somewhere like Auburn, yeah, where he was rumored to go. So, but I hope he has success there in Colorado.
Well, I mean, as long as he does better than 1-11, I think they'll be happy.
For sure. Make a bowl game. That's really what they want.
Oh, yeah.
All right, the third story we have today is the Rose Bowl has reached an agreement to allow the college football playoff to expand to 12 teams in the 2024 and 2025 seasons, which are the final two seasons of the current contract. What do y'all think about this?
Oh, it's going to be interesting. You know, when we, you know, we're going to talk about the four teams, the college football playoff here in a little bit, but looking at what this year would have looked like if it was 12 teams, it's like, wow. When we were talking about the expansion, I always thought eight was better. I always thought eight would have been more clear, because it allowed the top four teams to have their home games instead of five through eight get a home game and the others get a bye. That doesn't really make any sense to me. But it's interesting. The Rose Bowl was the one reason that was the one blocker of this whole, you know, get it done now, let's go ahead and do it. But they've reached an agreement to allow the college football playoff to expand.
Yeah, like you said, Gray, I mean, 12 teams is a lot, especially because you'll have some of these teams that will lose games and still be ranked inside the top 12. And really, I don't know if they should be able to compete for a national championship in that sense. But you definitely look at how the current playoff setup works out, where these teams on the bubble really, there's a lot of controversy, especially I know coming from an Alabama fan, you have a situation where you have to kind of make a decision between a very, very good TCU team, a Ohio State team that just suffered a huge loss versus their rival at home, now a team that already has two losses. Mm-hmm. So it kind of takes a lot of that controversy out, and you'll kind of actually be able to see what these teams are able to do and who's actually the better team. I like that aspect of it. But another thing to think about is now the regular season will not mean as much. Some of these losses will just kind of be thrown out the window. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this 12-team playoff will be perform going forward.
Yeah, winning in the regular season won't matter as much. I mean, you're going to have to win 10 games, 9 games to get in. But, you know, if you lose these one or two games, it's not going to be the end of the world like it was for some teams this year, like Tennessee, Alabama, and Clemson. But it's going to be – these bowl games are going to become more meaningful. And years past, players have sat out because they don't really care for them. So I'm glad to see these bowl games come back to prominence and actually matter. All right, Nathan, what do you got for us in college football this week and conference championships?
Yeah, so it's, you know, a difficult weekend. No Alabama football, no Auburn football to talk about. But, you know, let's go ahead and jump right in with number 4 USC taking on number 11 Utah in the Pac-12 championship. Utah looked very dominant in the 47-24 win against USC. Starting off in this game, watching it, it really surprised me how, you know, fast and quick this USC offense moved down the field, especially with Caleb Williams at quarterback. He was just really a momentum driver behind that offense. But Utah eventually figured out how to stop him. And honestly, really one of the main things that held USC's offense in check going later on to that game was an injury to Caleb Williams' leg. He did not look 100% at all. He limped across the field a lot of time. It took away one of the main components of the USC offense, and that's Caleb Williams' ability to scramble out of the pocket when he's pressured, especially with him being such a big guy. Great. What did you see from this Utah team? This is now their second win of the season against this USC team. What did you see from them to make them look like such a physical, really good team?
This Utah team is full of seniors. Full of seniors who not only are older, but they're leaders. And it all starts with Cameron Rising. He was outstanding in this game, obviously the MVP. He was, he has such grit and determination. And when I was watching it, I was like, man, that guy really looks like he plays for Utah. I mean, you just understand when you watch it. But for USC, I obviously their offense got off to a fast start, and yes, the injury to Caleb Williams really slowed them down. Utah was able to contain him, especially from getting out of the pocket, just like you said, Nathan, but their tackling defensively is atrocious. It was horrible. They could not tackle at all. Every tackle they tried to make towards the middle of the body and would not wrap up, they would just try and hit. And the Utah players, we were talking about how they're being physical, they're seniors, they're leaders, they're going to bounce right off of that. And that's exactly what they did in multiple, multiple occasions in this game.
Yeah, Utah's defense looked like the best in the country. I mean, they held USC to not having all these big chunk plays besides the Caleb Williams run where he supposedly popped his hamstring. But Cameron Rising, like you said, great. He's really shown he's like Utah right there. I mean, yeah. He got popped early in that game and his helmet flew off, and he still continued to play. But USC, they just couldn't close it out, man. I don't know what Lincoln Riley was doing. He should have just pulled Caleb Williams at that point. I mean, if he can't run, they were just blitzing him, and he just couldn't do anything with it.
Yeah,
the amount of sacks he took after getting hurt, it was incredible. And you mentioned Cameron Rising and how he really fought for this Utah team. I was really just surprised by the physicality of really the Utah defense to, put pressure on Caleb Williams and, blitz and get these sacks, especially when, it's difficult to tackle him. You see how big he is. And especially like I remember last week watching their game versus Notre Dame, Caleb Williams just ran all over him. So it's really, really big from Utah. All right, let's go ahead and move on to number three, TCU taking on number 10, Kansas State in the Big 12 championship. Kansas State ended up winning in overtime 31-28 on a last minute field goal after TCU failed to convert a fourth and goal at the 1-inch line. Alex, I know you really favor TCU. So what did you see from this team in this game to prove that they're a competitor?
Like with Cameron Rising at Utah, Max Duggan, the quarterback at TCU, put the team on his shoulders and really brought that game back and sent it to overtime. I was really impressed with him. After the game, he was so emotional. I really felt for him. He put it on the line, and it just didn't. I was pretty angry when Coach Sonny Dykes decided to run the same play twice at the goal line, getting the same result twice. Should have done a QB sneak there. Yeah. I don't know why these colleges refuse to do QB sneaks at like when they need like 1 yard to gain. It's statistically one of the best plays to do.
It works, yeah.
But Kansas State defense kind of held TCU's offense really in check, with only Quentin Johnson, the receiver, having 4 receptions for 139 yards. And Kendre Miller, the running back, only having 82 yards rushing. And usually he's kind of the bell cow there, having over 100 yards usually. So good for Kansas State. But also the Kansas State offense really had TCU's defense on their toes the entire game. Will Howard didn't have any turnovers. Deuce Vaughn broke some dude's ankles on TCU real bad at the end of that game. And it was pretty embarrassing for him. But, Kansas State had to battle without Malik Knowles, their leading receiver. And a lot of these guys, young guys, stepped up and allowed Kansas State to get that championship.
Yeah, this game was really good for Kansas State. I mean, just like you said, Alex, I was incredibly impressed with Deuce Vaughn, especially on that one carry that you were talking about as touchdown carry to go up by 8 in the game. I thought that was kind of the ice on the, even though it was still a one-score game, I thought, oh, that just did that. That was it. That just did it.
I turned it off.
But then Max Duggan, just like you said, just like we were talking about with Cam Rising, he put the team on his shoulders, literally carried them all the way down and tied the game. I don't know why you don't give him the ball and let him run the ball in overtime. You have it third and goal from the one, and you fail both times on halfback dive. I don't know how you didn't hand him the ball, because he had 15 carries for 110 yards and that one touchdown. But it was an incredible game for Kansas State, really good for them in that program. But TCU remains in the college football playoff due to this being such a close game.
All right, before we get into all of the college football playoff mess, let's go ahead and highlight some of the other conference championships from this weekend. Number 9 Clemson beat number 23 North Carolina 39-10 in the ACC championship. Number 1 Georgia beat number 14 LSU 50-30 in the SEC championship.
Oh my gosh.
Number two, Michigan beat Purdue 43-22 in the Big Ten Championship. And number 18, Tulane beat number 22, UCF 45-28 in the AAC Championship. Any of the other games stick out to you? I know Alex really wants to go in on LSU here in this SEC Championship.
LSU really not very impressive. I mean, they had a 502 passing yards, but I mean, at that point, Georgia really didn't care. They had clinched it at that point. So LSU, I don't know why Alabama lost to them, how they lost to them. This game would have been so much better if Alabama was in it, but of course they had to lose to LSU.
I stopped watching that game after LSU didn't pick up the field or didn't tackle the guy running back the field goal block. But all these games were blowouts. I mean, I thought the Clemson-North Carolina game would be more competitive than it was. Cade Klubnik looked outstanding, and he looks like the next, you know, dude at Clemson at quarterback.
Yeah, especially with DJ, you know, transferring, entering the transfer portal. And I really stopped watching that LSU game after that tip interception off that dude's helmet. And then, that was really something to watch. All right. Let's go ahead and move on to college basketball here, Ray, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it. So, recapping college basketball from this past week, only one game Pitt Alabama Crimson Tide was against South Dakota State. They ended up winning 78-65. This game was kind of close. Alabama was able to pull away at the end. Some interesting stats from this game. Noah Clowney continues to be impressive, 22 points and 9 rebounds in this game. Freshman Brandon Miller had 16 points and 9 rebounds as well. And Mark Sears continues to be outstanding from the three-point line, hitting 4 threes and 19 points. What did y'all see from Alabama in this game?
Yeah, I'm just going to go ahead and step in here. We had close to a 20-point lead early. Noah Clowney was really, you know, dominant. Me and Alex were just watching this game together and really were impressed by his physicality on the floor. But as this game went down the stretch, we really stopped putting pressure on this South Dakota State team and let them get back in this game. Really, the main things that we struggled with were, you know, shooting from three. I know we still shot 32%, which, you know, it's not the greatest, but it's still decent. But we ended up taking 40 threes this game and only made 13 of them. Another thing that continues to be an issue is free throw shooting. It's continuing to look really poor throughout this season. So I think we need to capitalize more on getting to the line and making our free throws. But you know, this Alabama team has playmakers and people who can take over a game at any point. You know, as you mentioned, Mark Sears continues to be one of the main drivers behind the offense. And, you know, Noah Clowney on defense continues to be making an impact. So, Alex, on this team right now, who's really the main guy? Who's the dude on this team?
I mean, the dude has to be Brandon Miller. Even though he's been kind of lacking scoring these past couple of games, I mean, he is that guy. The offense has ran through him, but you know, he is that guy. But the bench of the Crimson Tide has really kept them in these games. Even though they didn't perform this game, they've been really helpful in leading them along the way, beating teams like North Carolina. That's really going to help them when it comes to tournament time. A lot of depth, a lot of these top tier teams are kind of top heavy, so I think the Crimson Tide have a great chance of contending for the NCAA championship because of their depth.
Yeah, no doubt. I 100% agree. Alabama's depth is going to be one of the biggest things, not just in conference play, but when it comes to March in tournament play as well. So moving on, talking about Auburn's one game of the week as well. You know, with this being finals week, or coming up to finals week, it's, you know, and not seeing as many games as we did Thanksgiving week, but, you know, we're still college basketball. Auburn played against a toothpaste and Colgate, and they ended up winning 93-66. You know, we've been wanting offense from this Auburn team for weeks now, and you finally got it. Auburn shoots 45% from three. Sorry, I was looking at the wrong number. 47%, 45% from three. I'm struggling now. The only guy really that did not, you know, have any, you know, true three-point game was Chance Westry going 0-for-3. The true freshman is yet to, you know, get back healthy after his knee surgery, but really impressive offensive showing, especially from KD Johnson going 4 of 5 from three. He looked outstanding. He looked dominant. He looked like he does towards the end of the game, you know, especially towards the end of that St. Louis game where he just kind of took over, said, hey, we're just not going to lose this game. Jani Broome continues to look really good. He had 13 and 9 in this game, also had 4 steals. Wendell Green continues to be the lead of the offense. PG1, Alan Flanagan looked really good. This was just a really well put together by the Auburn team, really deep. I mean, Traore had 8, Carwell had 9, Westry had 8. So a really well-balanced game here from Auburn. What have you all seen from Auburn in this game to prove, okay, maybe they're starting to figure out a little bit offensively. If they do that, they've got one of, if not the best defenses in the country, and continue to do that with this Colgate team who was averaging like 82, 83 a game, holding them to 66. What does that prove about this Auburn team when it comes to the top teams, not just in the SEC, but in the country?
Great. I've been saying it for weeks on end, but it finally came to fruition here. They finally found their offense. I knew it was going to take some time, but they found it. They scored 93.
But it is Colgate. Points. It's Colgate.
I know who it's against. I know it's against, but it doesn't matter. They found their offense, and they can now continue to build on this with having their great defense. Holding, you know, Colgate to 66 points with you scoring 93 is obviously a recipe for success. The only thing I will mention is, you know, shooting 56 from the free throw line, that's which isn't great.
Got to get better at that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a struggle for big men nowadays. But with this Auburn team, they have so much talent. They have the ability to make such a long run when it comes to the tournament. It's just a matter of, can this offense, you know, stick with it? And if I see what they did in this game against some of the more top tier opponents, yeah, I think they can really do anything. Alex, what have you seen from this Auburn team and their offense this past weekend?
They showed a lot of improvement, and like with Alabama, their bench is going to be really helpful in winning them games. They played really well this game, and I think they're going to continue to play well as they progress throughout the season.
Yeah, no doubt. So just mentioning some of our games from this past week, the game of the week was Creighton versus Texas. Texas ended up winning 72-67. Indiana beat number 10, Indiana beat number 18, North Carolina, 77-65. Utah beat number 4, Arizona, 81-66. And number 6, Baylor beat number 14, Gonzaga, 64-63. All right, Alex, let's go ahead and wrap up. Let's start talking about what we have for the college football playoff. What do we got?
All right, so for the college football playoff, in the Fiesta Bowl, you'll have Michigan playing TCU, and that is on December 31st at 3 p.m. on ESPN. And then in the Peach Bowl, you'll have Georgia playing Ohio State on 31st at 7 p.m. on ESPN in Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean I don't think we've really got some close games here. I think both Michigan and Georgia win soundly in both those games. I don't know about you, Nathan, but this playoff, I mean, I think they've got the 4 most deserving teams, but I don't know if I would call this the 4 best teams in the country as of right now.
Yeah, definitely. Probably not the 4 best teams, but definitely the most deserving. Obviously, it's kind of turned into a political scenario of who deserves it more rather than who's better. But like you said, I don't think any of these teams will be close. Georgia's going to take care of business against Ohio State. And I don't really think TCU has a big chance versus this, you know, Michigan running game. And, you know, JJ McCarthy, who's really proving himself as a really good passer now.
All right. And we'll recap some other bowl game matchups next week on the show. All right, for upcoming weekend in college basketball, we have number 8 Alabama taking on number 1 Houston, number 11 Auburn taking on Memphis, both those games Saturday. And we have our game of the week, number 10 Arizona taking on number 14 Indiana. That'll be on Saturday as well. All right, and for the NFL upcoming this weekend, we have the Jets versus Bills, Vikings versus Lions, which is our game of the week, Eagles versus Giants, Ravens versus Steelers, Dolphins versus Chargers, Buccaneers versus 49ers, and Chiefs versus Broncos.
Yeah, finally a Lions game of the week, right?
They're playing good.
Didn't think we'd do that, yeah.
Hey, all right, we'll get to see Kirk Cousins again.
All right, that's all the time we have today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.